Kelly DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook, and we are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. Joining us now, Outkick360's Jonathan Hutton. We haven't talked to you since Rand Carthon was hired as the Titans general manager since his introductory press conference on Friday. Overall, your thoughts on the hire and your first impression of Rand Carthon?
Well, good to be with you guys. Look, the GM searches are way different for me and probably for everyone than head coaching searches. I can recognize names and rattle off coaching candidates. I can't do that with general managers because very rarely do we see GMs get a second opportunity. And they're normally behind the scenes where they have to be granted permission and they need to be noticed in the front office that they're in. I like where he's coming from. I like his background. He has experience in a lot of different areas that I think you would look for in a general manager. And the one glaring difference is he comes in without the executive vice president role, and they're not saying who has final say over personnel. They're using collaboration, which is all good, but it comes down to wins and losses. And I guess that's also fine because everyone's going to be held accountable based on what they do moving forward. Carthon's a part of that now. And again, I like his evaluation, and I think the most important part will be identifying the players that they are trying to draw up as the prototypical, the prototype for the Titans player. I thought they got away from that over the last couple of drafts and in free agency for that matter. And he's got to hit the ground running with the Senior Bowl coming up next week.
And I think the players is interesting. It's not just about the players that Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel bring in. It's also the players that they decide to keep. I thought one thing from his press conference was pretty interesting. When asked about Ryan Tannehill, he was pretty noncommittal, saying, I'll have to come in, I'll have to evaluate him, like he hasn't evaluated him already. And then when asked about Derrick Henry, he was saying, I can't wait to size him up. I've been following his career. You can absolutely win a championship by running the ball. So very different vibes from Rand Carthon when asked about Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. Do you think that's any indication of what the Titans are going to do moving forward in terms of their core that's already in the building?
Yeah, I mean, well, with Tannehill, you know, it was a vast contrast to what we saw from or what we heard from Vrabel in the final presser of the season where he said Tannehill's healthy, he's our starter. That was a ringing endorsement. I like the fact that Carthon said, like, hey, we're going to evaluate our options. They absolutely should. They can save, what, $18 million on the cap by trading or releasing him this offseason. They were handcuffed with the contract at this time last year for Tannehill. So, yeah, I think he's saying exactly what he should say. There's no way he knows this roster up and down, and he should refrain from making any definitive statements on anyone. And look, it's pretty easy to figure out that they're either going to keep Henry or they're going to draft a guy and think that they can run it without Henry as part of the backfield. But Henry wasn't the problem. Tannehill wasn't either. They've got to start up front because if they don't, it really doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. And it doesn't really matter who's running the football because we saw Derrick Henry have success, but they weren't putting points on the board.
Now, Hutt, looking at this team and looking at this upcoming draft, because I think that's going to be, you know, or is the question right now, and it could be the question leading up to the NFL draft. We know it's you know, Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud that are sort of 1-2. Will Levis is up there, Anthony from Florida. But if you have Will Levis projected as a top 12 pick, and he falls to you, Tennessee Titans, do you get him and start building right away around him, or do you wait?
I'm drafting the quarterback if he's ranked that high. Look, the rook is always with the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have one, if you don't feel confident that you're winning a Super Bowl with one and you've got a guy ranked extremely high, you take him over any other position. But, Mace, I'm not that – keen on Will Levis being a franchise guy. I don't know about you. You know, I hear a lot of excuses made for Will Levis because he played at Kentucky that other guys don't get the benefit of the doubt with. And Levis is good. He's a good quarterback. He's a first-round talent, but he's not up there in the upper tier like you mentioned with the other two, with Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, at least for me. But if he's ranked that high and I feel like he is the – he's got all the traits, and on top of that, he's ready to rock and roll, yeah, you take him if you're that confident in him. And they would know better than me on those traits that everyone's talking about. The problem is Kiper is so high on this guy that I'm already disgusted by all the discussion on him. And that's not Will Levis.
And it's only
fault.
January. Just wait till, I know. It's wait till
January
March
25th. And he's saying, you know what? It doesn't matter if you lose by 10 or 40. Will Levis is a great quarterback. And I'm like, what? Why say that? Like, you're supposed to raise the talent around you if you're the franchise guy. And I didn't see Will Levis do that. I didn't hear Penn State crying whenever he transferred to Kentucky. So I just feel I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum with him. And that doesn't mean he can't be a pro and a good starter. I just don't view him in the same lens as some of the draft guys are already digging in and screaming from the mountaintops about.
Do you think this organization saw what I think the world saw this weekend in regards to the AFC, that if you don't go out and solidify that quarterback position, then you might be fourth best, maybe even fifth best in the AFC that seems to be jumbled up with really good quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point because, look, it's one of two things that I think you come away with front office and ownership. Number one, if you're not in that upper tier that you're talking about, you're really fighting for second place. And, you know, I don't think the majority of owners or GMs or head coaches view that as a win. And that would be the argument against bringing back Tannehill. You would invest somewhere else because you're not competing with the upper tier. Although, the other option would be option two. We're also seeing in the NFC, you don't have to have a first round quarterback to have success. You need to develop that guy and you put pieces around him, and you can win in the NFL doing that. Jalen Hurts has a run game. They've invested in the pass game and they have a great defense. 15 more sacks than the next best defense had in the regular season. All the pieces are coming together for them. And then Brock Purdy, Willie, Mace, we've talked about quarterback development during the season. There go all the excuses for not having enough practice time or the evaluation time on a guy to be able to come in and play. Shanahan has all the confidence in the world in that kid, and it shines through with him it's third and two and in the third quarter, and Purdy's throwing a 7-yard completion to George Kittle. They're not running the football. They can run it if they have to, but they're putting the ball in the 7th-round pick hands, and that speaks volumes. So I think you can look one of two ways. You can't be in the middle. You can't be in the middle ground, unsure of your future at the position. So, I mean, even in a world where – and you guys know I'm on board with – I think the simple answer solution for this next season is Tannehill's the quarterback. Even in that mindset, I'm still investing in the quarterback position. And even if it's a first-round type grade – you're trading back in, whatever it takes, you get your guy. Yeah. That doesn't mean that you can't have both a rookie and Tannehill under a team-friendly contract that's a bit front-loaded this upcoming season so you can get out of it if you need to for a younger guy. I don't think Malik Willis is that guy. And the evaluation comes down to who's the future. But at the same time, I don't think Vrabel is thinking about much of anything other than 2023.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Sticks around with us coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, I think it's very interesting. Ever since Rand Carthon got hired, we haven't really heard a ton about the Titans offensive coordinator search. We know they reached out to Eric Bieniemy, Matt Nagy, come from different systems. We know that they've interviewed Justin Outen, not necessarily for offensive coordinator. We know that they've interviewed Charles London, inside and Tim Kelly. What are your thoughts about the offensive coordinator position and what comes next?
Well, the timing of it is not as pressing as general manager. So I think that's important to note here. The other thing that's interesting is they requested permission for Bieniemy. His contract expires at the end of the season, meaning he doesn't need permission if he wants to jump ship and change course. There are 5 head coaching openings remaining right now. So if some of your offensive coordinator possibilities are, you know, stuck in hills dragging, trying to get an interview, and I mean, there's still second rounds going on. I'm still not sure what Indianapolis is doing. Then you're probably going to wait on those interviews and then determine who's left of the group. Not everybody that we're discussing is getting those chats, right? Bieniemy has in the past. And I found it intriguing that they requested both Matt Nagy and Eric Bieniemy, because the thought was last year, if Bieniemy bolted for a head coaching job, Nagy would take his spot. And if Nagy got another opportunity, then so be it. But it made sense in the progression of things. And there was a slight delay in announcing that Bieniemy was coming back to Kansas City, even after he didn't get the head coaching position. So he may view this as it's time to try something else, much like Matt LaFleur did, instead of sticking where I am. Don't know, but Vrabel would know him well. He knows Andy Reid well. And my guess is there are several conversations that Vrabel has had that have not been reported publicly, because this is Vrabel's call. Unlike the general manager search, I get the sense it's straight Mike Vrabel is choosing his offensive coordinator. And it very well could be Tim Kelly, who joined him as the passing game coordinator. And I'm still uncertain about what effect he had, if any, on last year's offense. But right now, it feels like they're waiting on the head coaching searches to progress, or they're staying in-house with Kelly.
Jonathan Hutton is with us from OutKick. Jonathan, when do you think we will start to hear some talks about Jeffrey Simmons and the strategy there?
It's very interesting, Willie. I think this is item zero. You remember Mark Howard used to have item zero for the
yes.
for the morning shows.
May he rest in peace, Jeffrey Simmons, the great Mark Howard.
Absolutely. Look, this is a tone setter. It sends a message to your locker room, to potential free agents. We know how they treated A.J. Brown. New general manager is here. He has to get to know the cap very soon. What they do with Jeffrey Simmons affects other positions. You can't let this guy go. I mean, if you weren't willing to pay A.J. Brown after year three, I don't know why the organization wouldn't pay Jeffrey Simmons after year four, whenever he played ball, literally and figuratively, with you a year ago and fought through the ankle injury. So this whole process plays big, I think, on the whole perception of Rand Carthon's first month and a half on the job. Let's start there. I don't get the sense Simmons is playing ball again the way he did last offseason, even on that fifth year. Right. And so knowing that, you can't – you've got to get that settled first and foremost. It doesn't have to be the first move you make, but it needs to be the first call and negotiation start for him. You've got to get that ball rolling, because you don't want that to really churn and snowball into something bigger than what it should be. And look, I'm still uncertain as well on Simmons' representation in all of this. So, you know, it's a family member. Is he represented by an agent now? All of that plays a factor in the conversations that will be had. But those should be starting soon, Willie, because if not, then you start speculation from the player's end of things after he played through and played well despite the injury, and he's such a big part and centerpiece of that defense.
All right, let's go down the list of some contracts that you have to go through every year, no matter who the general manager was going to be. But you're Rand Carthon, you start looking at your money. So let's start with Bud Dupree. Definitely gone. Find a way to keep him with restructure, or ride it out.
I think he's definitely gone.
I agree.
Find a way to keep him with restructure. I think Bud Dupree values himself more than that. And the value from where the organization would sit is you're not available enough, right? Like he's available more than Taylor Lewan, but the hip injury is something that has lingered with him. And I'll keep it simple. Yeah, he's gone. I don't think they can afford to keep him around and just wish upon a star that he's available for 17 or 18 weeks.
Okay. Lewan, probably gone, correct?
Gone, yeah. And I think he's – I mean, my take is he's gone to be full-time media. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's playing again.
I sense you're right. Ben Jones.
Ben Jones is – this is the difficult decision, because I don't think they want to turn over every piece of their offensive line, and he's been their glue guy. But the age, the wear and tear, all that factors in. And he, the opposite of Dupree, though, I think I would absolutely try to bring him in on a team-friendly deal and not have to have a rookie center or a free agent center paired with a new left guard and a new left tackle. I would see if I could get him in for another year.
Robert Woods.
No. Robert, no. I mean, he's Robert Woods is a good wide receiver who doesn't climb the ladder enough for me. He's got to be paired with a true number one, which, look, the Titans, whenever they brought him in, A.J. Brown was still on the roster. I'm going to give him a little bit of credit there. I did not see the chain mover that I saw in Los Angeles with Robert Woods. So price tag, it cannot be steep if he's back.
Any other players you see who are veteran players that you think they would move on from to create more flexibility, more cap space to go do things?
It would be on offense. And again, the cap space would be with Ryan Tannehill. You can save $18 million. And I mean, that was the argument and why they couldn't do anything a year ago. So if they really want to maneuver the roster, that's the move you make. And you can still be the same core that they would preach, no matter who the offensive coordinator was, from Arthur Smith, from LaFleur, Arthur Smith, or with Downing. It was still, they're built up front, they run the football well, and they're going to move the chains on third and manageable. So I'm on board with not making that move yet. They could be, just based on the savings that they could have. And look, hey, let's also factor in the guys who are under contract but are just not that good. Not meaning like Vrabel doesn't even want to use them barely on special teams. And that would be Dylan Raidens and Caleb Farley. I'm not saying there's a huge market for them, but what are you doing wasting a 53-man roster spot on a first-round pick who either has a knee issue or a back issue? You just fired the general manager for practically drafting the guy. That was part of the reason. And it's a wasted roster spot if you're not even going to use him on special teams. So contracts aside, those are decisions that Rand Carthon have to make, and Vrabel. They've got to make in trying to even get a seventh-round pick for something. I mean, again, if you're moving on, what's the point in allowing the guy to come in and compete in training camp if he's not even considered depth? Again, if you're not playing special teams for the Tennessee Titans, you don't deserve to be on the roster.
Now, there was something that Vrabel said last offseason, right after the Cincinnati game, where we have to be great around our quarterback. You think he still believes that, or he's too? Because, you know, I told Caroline and Willie, I said, listen, I took by what Rand Carthon said, I took it as somebody believes in Ryan Tannehill still and somebody doesn't. And Rand is sort of the guy that's going to tip the scale one way or another. If you ask Vrabel that question again, do you think he answers it the same way?
Yeah, I do, because, I mean, Josh Dobbs even took a beating. Mm-hmm. Vrabel knows the offensive line was bad, really bad. I also, I mean, consider the perception of both guys, though. I mean, San Francisco, they went from Jimmy G, who would win games for you, wasn't available, 50 to 60% of the time. They draft Trey Lance. They trade the farm to go up and get him. They end up with Brock Purdy and Garoppolo still on the roster, and there's been like this quarterback cycle where they're willing to move on from a guy that was good, not great. So that's the mentality of Carthon. And here, the mentality has been built on the run, built on defense, and built on the offensive line. And when they traded A.J. Brown, they didn't think they were trading away their identity. I think that's crucial. Debo Samuel was also in the same boat. San Francisco kept him. There were more pieces around at the quarterback spot than what they had here last year. I should also mention that, that compared to San Fran. But I think the different mindsets come down to how the teams are built structurally. The depth is so much better with San Fran, and that certainly proves to be true at quarterback. And they do have to be great around Tannehill. Tannehill alone is not winning you a championship. But I can't point to a rookie that's coming in next year to do that either. And I'll go back to what I said 15 minutes ago, Mace. I'm still investing in the quarterback position behind Tannehill. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you've got to move on from him in 2023.
Who is your quarterback in 2023?
Tannehill. But I'm also investing in a rookie behind him, and it doesn't have to be a first round guy. but I know it's not Willis. Dobbs can be a piece, but Dobbs is not the future at the position. And Tannehill in 2023 is better than any option other than a massive trade that could be made. And I don't think they are in a position roster-wise to trade away a bunch of picks that could end up starting for you a year from now. I think they can reload while also, quote-unquote, rebuild. But we'll know the true answer to that, Caroline, on what they do with Ryan Tannehill. If they go draft a rookie, they're in rebuild mode. And if they bring Tannehill back, they're reloading around him to eventually find the future at the position while trying to win now. And I don't blame them for that, because other than the top two or three teams in the AFC, you believe you can compete. They were as bad as they were, and they were 7-5 at one point. So I can't knock them for having that mindset, considering the options that they have. They need to tweak their offense. They don't have to completely overhaul every position.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Yep, sounds great. Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks, Hutton. Hutton joins us every Wednesday at noon. And hey, Preds fans, hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill Margaritaville on Broadway with 1025-1063 The Game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Caroline, Willie DeMays, 1025-1063 The Game.
I think not just only the way we outshot him, I think the quality of shots as well. I thought we had some really good looks. I think, I mean, we had breakaways. Cody had some breakaways. I think Duchesne was in on a couple of two-on-ones. And we had some really quality looks. And I thought maybe the game should, at least, I mean, late in the third, it gets tight because they push. But, I mean, for the first 15 minutes of the third, I thought it was just us. And we could have scored easily a couple more goals. So, sometimes shots is a good, I guess, parameter to look at. But again, you got to look at the quality shots too. And I thought we had some really good looks and created some really good things in their end. And I was really happy with our effort last night.
There you go. That was Matthias Ekholm on Chase and Michelle earlier today. The Predators, it was a good win last night. 2-1 over a good Winnipeg Jets team sitting at second in the Central Division. And you saw Tanner Janot snap that dry streak, finally got a goal
Thank
last night.
Heavens. My goodness.
Tanner
I'm
Janot.
So happy for him. Oh, my gosh. He was feeling it.
It's been 89 years, it feels like. But a good win for the Predators last night.
In Oxbow, Saskatchewan years, it was definitely 89 years. I mean, he is the pride of that town. It's a tiny town up in Saskatchewan. They always give us feedback that they're watching up there. So we were talking about through this, like, I know they're doing the rain dance up there. They're trying the lucky shirt. They're trying the lucky, you know. It happens to people sometimes, and it tests your character, mm-hmm. right? And everybody knows about it. So, man, I was happy for him. And it was a game-winning goal. Broke a 1-1 tie. So right. It was huge that it happened when it did.
Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I know all about that team mm-hmm. because Terry Crisp talks about his Saskatchewan Rough Riders all the time. But my biggest takeaway last night was you got to win. And you continue, you know, a couple of wins in a row. You're stringing wins together. But the theme all season, at least for me, is let me see you do it more. Because we've seen the Predators. They win a few. They get hot. You start to think, okay, all right. And then they lose a few. So that's my next thing moving forward is, what else does this team need to do before the All-Star break in that game on Thursday to give fans a little bit of hope that they can carry it in? And after the break, you might be saying, we'll get a win. And that's obvious. Yes, you want to win. But there have been some wins that we've seen from this team that didn't make you feel great. Wins are wins. Points are points. And you want to get those when you can get them. But when it comes to morale of the fan base and belief of this team for the fan base, how do they need to get that win?
Well, I'm not sure for some of the fan base anything can be done in one game, right? They're going to feel like this. They're going to be cynical. They're going to be skeptical until, honestly, they win a round in the playoffs, right? There's a certain faction that has come to the conclusion. They've made up their mind. Mm-hmm. This team isn't good enough. We've got to do something about it. And I get that. That's every fan base, I believe, every passionate fan base in every sport. There's going to be a faction of those fans that are vocal, that they want to be right. They make an assessment. They have a take. And they're going to stick to that take until they are absolutely proven wrong. So there's not, like last night, What did we say yesterday? What do they have to do? Well, they got to win. Mm-hmm. Well, they won. And the question is the same today as it was yesterday.
They got to win.
You think all those people that have been frustrated feel totally different today? No. But all you can do is put your best stuff out there. And as you heard Matthias Ekholm, what I liked about the win last night was sometimes you win 2-1. Let's take two games in which they won 2-1. They beat the Blue Jackets 2-1. They didn't play real well in that game, mm-hmm. right? They were fortunate to win that game. They relied heavily on their goaltender, and they kind of let the foot off the gas in the third period. Last night, they were flat out better than the Jets, who were way, way better than the Columbus Blue Jackets, right? The Jets are a contender in the West. Nashville flat out outplayed them in the second and the third period. The only reason it was only 2-1 was because Connor Hellebuyck is one heck of a goaltender. Mm-hmm. I think they had the quality chances. You heard Matthias mention that a few times. Quality. If you can generate quality, you know, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, those guys didn't have goals last night, but they played a good game. The last time they played the Jets in Winnipeg, Forsberg, Duchene, Johansson, Granlund, etc., outplayed badly by the Jets' top players. Why was it such a big, disturbing loss in St. Louis last week? Because the top players got badly mm-hmm. outworked, outplayed, out-efforted by the St. Louis Blues top players. So that was a good statement last night. The top players showed they're capable of being strong forces matched up against the other team's good players. So to me, that's going to be what defines the rest of the season. They've got 35 games left. So how do the top players play? You tell me they play well? If they get good grades in the second semester, if you will, better grades in the second semester than the first semester, I'll take my chances of where they end up. Because they've got the best goalie in the world right now. I mean, I'm in the regular season of the last 3 years, the guy keeps doing it. UC Soros. He's unbelievable. And a lot of people say, well, he's keeping them afloat. Well, yeah, but he's going to be there. They've got him on their team, right? He's not going to leave. Imagine saying, well, you know, the Saints, you know, they're only good because they have Drew Brees, right? Well, but they have Drew Brees, right? Yeah. He elevates everybody else, right? I mean, we accept that in football. So the Predators do have that going for them. So if they can just continue to fix holes, make steady improvements, I still like what they can achieve what they hope to achieve this year and just reach their potential. They have not played to their potential as a group so far this year, but they've gotten steadily better.
Well, if they can play, you know, the way they did in that third period, you know, then they got a more than a good shot at, you know, making the playoffs and then ultimately, you know, making some noise in the playoffs. Because that third period, with the exception of last, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and especially when, you know, they took their goalie, the Jets took their goalie out of the net.
There was a couple of close calls.
It was when it hit the crossbar, and I'm surprised it didn't go in, but luckily it didn't. They played a hell of a third period. But to me, still, I think the game shouldn't have been that close. You know, the power play, they did good at stopping the Jets' power play, but that last power play they had, I think they got one shot on net. On that last power play, the Jets did a good job at killing that power play. I think if they would have had more shots, then maybe, you know, they could have had another goal. But they just, that last power play just didn't do anything for me.
The power play is going to be a big story to the question that you're answering, Caroline. That is, you know, how does the power play do from here on out, mm-hmm. right? Is what does the power play look like in the last 35 games? If it's significantly improved, I'm going to tell you that they're going to get some good results. If it's how it has been, it's going to be a struggle. And this is the thing. They've been fighting uphill for a long time, right? They were 5-8-1 on November the 12th. They've won 4 of their last 5. They're 11-5-2 in the last 18. They're 18-10-5 since November the 12th. Now, that's more of what the record, you know, would be, right? That's pretty steady. Like we always use, they've been inconsistent, but 18-10-5 over 33 games, it's not bad. Now, a lot of it, UC Soros elevating them, but UC Soros is on this team, right? They're not renting UC Soros for the first half of the year. He's going to be there in the second half of the year.
And I think that's what makes fans feel great about this team is the fact that UC Soros is wearing a Predators jersey. But I think to that point is, lot of people feel, okay, great, you got UC Saros, and he's playing out of his mind. And when he does steal games, great. Those are points, regardless if your goalie saves the game or not. I think the concern comes from, well, what happens if UC Saros breaks an ankle? You know, that is a realistic situation.
What happens if Connor Hellebuyck breaks his ankle? I mean, it's the same as any team.
But I'm talking about with this team. It's the same thing. Any team loses their best player, they're not going to be as good as they were. But I think that's the concern is, okay, let's say UC Saros doesn't play out of his mind. If he can't, you know, continue this pace that he is at, which it's maybe not fair to ask your goalie to play absolutely out of his mind day in and day out, week in and week out. If UC Saros does get injured, can this team carry this team without UC Saros?
No.
And the answer is no.
Of course not. But that's the case with any team that has an elite goaltender that they're relying on. Shesterkin for the Rangers. They're a totally different team without him. I just mentioned the Jets with Hellebuyck. So that's obvious. But I think Saros has been at an elite level for long enough now, going on 3 years, that there may be a little bit of a drop-off, but he's going to give you a chance. He's going to give you a chance. Now, if a guy gets injured, what are you going to do? Just like last year. Like, I didn't hear a whole lot of people making excuses for them when they didn't have him in the playoff series. I would have loved to have seen a playoff series with UC Saros, but we'll never know what would have happened. When you saw what the team looked like without UC Saros in the playoffs, and that was no chance, right? They were done. It was over when
it
he got
brutal.
Hurt. Yeah, and they wouldn't have played Colorado. They would have played Calgary. But I don't want to talk about last year at all. Here's one thing that I'm curious about. Now, maybe we'll come back to this. I want to throw these things out there. Grade the first. Let's call this the first semester, right? The final exam. We got one more game before the first semester is over. It's not exactly half and half, but there's a break coming, right? So let's give the grades of the top players for the first semester. And let's talk about first, I'll be the professor, and I'm talking to the students. Okay, here are your grades. Here's what I want to see in the second semester. And we'll go from there.
We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. And speaking of the Predators, do not miss tonight's Smashville Live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6 p.m. See your Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. Preds player guests tonight will be Nino Niederreiter and Ryan McDonough. Smashville Live is brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, and Superbook Sports. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Predators Professor Willie, take it away. End of the semester grades.
Okay. This is what I got. So through 47 games, the Predators are 3 points out of a playoff spot. They're behind where they need to be. 23-18-6. So in my mind, that's underachieving, right? But as we mentioned, they were 5-8-1 on November the 12th. 18-10-5 since then. So that's 33 games where they're playing a little bit more towards the pace that you need to play at. But they're going to have to stay at that pace or better it to make up the ground and get into the playoffs. So there's probably 11 teams for the eight spots right now. Vancouver pretty much, they waved the white flag the other day, right? They're out. St. Louis is teetering right now, especially with their injury situation. But they're still in it. Predators are still in it. And you've got, you know, eight or nine other teams that are, you know, really going for it right now. Seattle's in the mix. Like, wait a minute, where does Seattle come from? Everything's going right for them. That they're not supposed to be here, but they're there. So that's making it difficult to get in there. So they're going to have to play really well to get in there. As we mentioned yesterday, to get the 97 points, they're probably going to have to win at least 20 of the last 35. Is that doable? Yeah, that's doable, especially if some of the losses are overtime losses and you get those extra points there. We'll see what it takes to get in there. So now let's go individually, right? The top players, top paid players, core of the team. Let's look what they've done in the first semester and ask, could they be better in the second semester? Are they reasonably capable of being better in the second semester? UC Saros, we have to give an A+.
Yes.
Right? Now,
yes.
Like you, what you're saying, look, you got to be thinking about it. He could only go down. Right? And if he does, what happens? Right? So everybody else would have to pick up the slack. But let's hope he can stay at least at an A level. I mean, let's hope. So the next, let's go to the highest paid players. Roman Josi. If last year was an A+, you know, historic season, 96 points, I'm giving him an A-. I think he's been good. Maybe not quite as good, but I think he's been good.
I think the thing with Roman Josi this year has been maybe the numbers aren't what they were last year. But Roman Josi, you can at least always count on him.
Absolutely. He's a consistent force. He leads the team in shots. He's getting the analytics are still way, way up there. He's world class at what he does. So I'm going A-minus for him. Philip Forsberg, I'm giving a B. I think he's been good. I see a B as a good grade, but room for improvement. Right? If I'm the teacher, that's what I'm telling Phil. Phil, you've been good. But if I can get a little bit more, I mean, I know what Phil looks like when he's an A. Right, I haven't seen Philip Forsberg this year. Just little patches. He's always been a little bit streaky. He needs to have a better second semester.
So you think if you tell him he's at a B, but he can get to an A, he'd really put it in gear?
Well, let's hope. If I'm a good teacher, I hope that's how he responds.
I think the freshness of the contract also makes us all overly critical of Philip Forsberg, and I think that's fair. No. It was a big contract because he had a big year last year, and he was signed to that contract because of what he did last year.
All right, let's go to Matt Duchene. Now, to me, okay, I said C-.
I was going to say D+.
Okay.
If C is average, C is, you know, what you can expect, C is run-of-the-mill, Matt Duchene's been below average.
I agree, and I don't know how he would grade himself, but I grade him with a bar being very high. Right, he makes $8 million a year. He had a great year last year. You saw what he can do for a team when he's at these last two games. Since basically they had that meeting where they looked each other in the eye, they had the quote uncomfortable conversations. I've seen a very driven Matt Duchene. I saw the player that I saw last year, using the speed, dynamic moves to the net, creative passing, engaged in the game. I've seen too many games where he just hasn't been there like that. So imagine what the team could look like if he has a B+ or an A- second semester, right? And you have a final grade of a B. Like, you're thinking about this. He's capable, right? You have to have high expectations.
That's the frustrating thing.
Yes.
Is all these guys, we know they're capable. The power play, we know
the power play
capable.
Is an F. The power play is a flat-out F to this point, right?
It's bottom of the league.
They got an F on their project. The first semester project, they got an F
on. So what are you going to do in the second semester to get that grade up, all right? I'm challenging them. That's basically what this meeting was about the other day, right? It started with these guys. Mikael Granlund, Ryan Johansson. I also have C-minuses for them.
Yeah.
I have C-minuses. They're
I'm
capable
like a D
of
for
better.
Ryan Johansson.
Yeah. If they were 36 or 37 years old, then I would say, look, it's expected. They're getting up there in age. They're not what they were. I don't think that at age 30, 31, 32, that you should expect this big of a drop-off from last year. I think they're capable of more. So if the second semester is better, what would that mean for a team that's 23, 18, and 6 with these grades? With these grades. And an F on the power play, right? There's room for improvement to me. A lot of people are saying, well, they're maxing out because Saros is doing this. I don't think so. Not when I look at these grades. If the top players play better. I'm not saying they all have to get A's, but if they all are better than what we've graded them so far, I think you have the makings of a decent team. I'll give you another. Ryan McDonough is another guy. I think started off, if you broke it up into first quarter, second quarter, I think I would give him a C- or a D the first quarter because I just don't think he found his place. I think it was more of an A- to A in the second quarter. When they put him with Roman Josi, when he's played with Roman Josi, The team is 15-6-3 since they put those two together. It was interrupted when he got the puck in the face and he missed seven games. But when they've put those two together, it's looked much, much better. So McDonough, I think, has improved. I think overall I'd give him a B-, C+, for the first semester. But I think his curve is going. I thought he was fantastic last night. McDonough. Carrier got hurt. He had to play more. He was awesome last night defensively. He's an anchor. Niederreiter, I say B, right? Not setting the world on fire. I didn't expect him to, but he's having kind of a Niederreiter.
He
season.
Started off strong and sort of leveled out now.
Yeah, and if you look at the course of his career, these are about the numbers that he's put up year in and year out. So I think he's been okay. He's not bad. I think Mattias Ekholm, I'm giving a strong A-. I think he's had a very, very good year. And then to me, if you look at the payroll, that's a pretty good 70% of your payroll with those guys right there. So those are the guys that they're going to sink or swim with. So those are the – I mean, we can keep going, but I don't think you need my grade on, all these guys at the bottom of the line.
As wonderful as they are.
Yeah. I guess it's going to come down to these guys that we're just talking about, right?
I think the overall takeaway is for everyone except UC Saros and maybe Roman Josi, there is a lot to be desired.
There's room for improvement.
There is yes. so the
and they're going to have to
roof.
Improve.
They're going to yeah. have to improve. So my next question is, what if they don't? Then where do you go from there?
Well, like we said, I think the last time we had this, you know, strong conversation, they were coming off of that road trip where they lost to Montreal. They went 3-2 on the road trip. After they started 3-0, and you're thinking, man, if they get one more of these, they didn't. Right? Then they come home and lose to Buffalo, but we were saying, okay, you got this stretch between now and the All-Star break. They've done pretty well, right? They've won 4 out of 5. They had the huge dud in St. Louis, but they've won 4 out of 5. So I think the first marker was, are they going to stay relevant here? Are they going to collapse before this All-Star break that has everybody over the next 2 weeks going, what do we do? Well, they've stayed in it, right? Win or lose tomorrow, they've played reasonably well. Like we said, 18-10-5 in the last 33, 11-5-2 in the last 8. They're trending, generally speaking, in the right direction. 2 steps forward, 1 step back, mm-hmm. 2 step forward, 1 step back. But you're still going forward in general. Still has to be better. The next marker, I think, is the trade deadline, mm-hmm. right? If they fall back in the trade deadline, you got to act accordingly, right? You have to start looking. Okay, it's not going to happen this year. We got to start thinking that way. And then, of course, at the end of the season is when you really have to do the serious evaluation, kind of like what we're doing with the Titans mm-hmm. right now. We're dissecting everything. That will happen at you're the end of the season. Mm-hmm. If they don't meet expectations, they're not a playoff team, I think you're going to have to look at a different direction, right, in some form or fashion.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Professor Willie.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I encourage my students to stay motivated. You know, if I got to do my job as the teacher. Keep motivating people. Let's go. Be positive.
Coming up next, Amy Adams Strunk hints at some changes that could be on the horizon. What exactly are they? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.